Man, that was awesome, guy. I love the jingle bells. Seriously, how about Ashley and the Crossfund band? Man, these guys, they're the real deal. Hey, I'm Chris Maloney. If we haven't had a chance to meet yet, I'm the pastor of multiplication and growth here at Crosspoint. And you might be sitting out there thinking, no, you're not. But seriously, I am. But I'm new. I'm really new here. So if we haven't had a chance to meet, I'd love to meet you today. Come say hey out in the commons this morning afterwards. Well, hey, does it feel like Christmas yet? I mean, is anyone just pumped that it's Christmas? Not like the stage is just set. The turkey is in the fridge. Your leftovers are ready. Maybe you've got your Thanksgiving Day leftover turkey sandwich ready to go. You know, with the gravy-soaked piece of bread right in the middle and the stuffing and mashed potatoes and basically a carb sandwich. I was thinking about it this week, and there's a guy, his name's Ross Geller, and he loves his Thanksgiving leftover sandwich. He loves it so much that he was willing to, well, I don't want to, spoiler alert, so just check out the video.
Hi. Hi. What's wrong, buddy?
Someone at work ate my sandwich.
Well, what did the police say?
My Thanksgiving leftover sandwich. I can't believe someone just ate it.
Ross, it's just a sandwich.
Just a sandwich? Look, I am 30 years old, okay? I'm gonna be divorced twice, and I just got evicted. That sandwich was the only good thing going on in my life. Someone ate the only good thing going on in my life.
Look, I have enough stuff for one more sandwich. I mean, I was gonna eat it myself, but...
Oh, that would be incredible. Thank you so much. I still can't believe someone ate it. I mean, look, I left a note and everything.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Ross Geller's lunch. Ross Geller's lunch who? Ross Geller's lunch, please don't take me, okay?
I'm surprised you didn't go home wearing your lunch.
Oh man, I don't know about you guys, man, but the Thanksgiving episodes from Friends just get me every single time. Well, I don't know what it's like at your house, but for me, you know, we're a couple days out from Thanksgiving, which means leftovers should be thrown away. I'm a one day post the meal leftover kind of guy. Is there anyone else like me out there that like after a day leftovers are in the trash? Like that is me. I hate leftovers anything longer than that. But I'm not crazy like Ross, I don't think. But I am crazy about Christmas. I'm so excited to be up here sharing with you guys this morning. I mean, Christmas is truly my favorite time of year, and I'm so excited to be here. And as you can see, we're kicking off the Christmas series this morning, and we're calling it Christmas Matters. And you may be sitting there thinking, well, yeah, it does. That seems pretty obvious. Like, of course, Christmas matters. And that just shows you how creative we are around here, right? I mean, just really simple, right to the point, Christmas matters. But really, why? Like, why does it matter? You see, every year we deck the halls and we pull out the Christmas tree from storage, right? No judgment if that's you guys. Or maybe you go cut down the old-fashioned Christmas tree and you hang all the lights and we do all of these things, but why? Why do we actually do it? And I think that regardless of your background, regardless of your spiritual background and where you've been, Christmas, it really just has this thing about it that draws us in. There's just something about Christmas that just continues to pull and pull and pull at us. And today we're going to explore why every single year we orient our entire lives towards this season. We get kind of crazy about the season and the symbols and the hope that's in this season and what it brings and the anticipation. The anticipation of Christmas is just wild. And that's where we're going to be heading today. But before we get there, let me pray for us. God, this morning, I'm so excited to see what you have for us. Lord, I know that the season of Christmas for some is a difficult one. And I know this morning it might not be, some people might just not be ready for this season, but it's here. And so God, I pray this morning that you would help orient us to see what Christmas is really all about and why Christmas really does matter. especially this year. We love you. Amen. So let's jump right in this morning. Is there anyone out there that Christmas starts like in October? Just give me a look. Like anyone crazy like me? Yeah, like I started listening to Christmas music in the month of October. And my wife, she thinks I'm an idiot, understandably, because October's not really Christmas. It's hard to sing. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas when it's like 60 degrees out and there's leaves on the tree. I mean, it's just not Christmas season, but that's me. Like, I just love Christmas. There's just something about it that just, I just can't stop myself. And in high school, it got so bad for me that I became known as the Christmas sweater guy. Now, Eric had a great Christmas sweater on. That was pretty good. But for me in high school, I thought it would be a good idea to buy enough Christmas sweaters to wear one every day of the week to school for the entire month of December. So I did that. I went to Goodwill, and I stocked up. I mean, I bought all of the Christmas sweaters. My friend Paul and I, we decided it was a great idea. We pooled our money, and at Goodwill, that goes pretty far. And so we just bought every Christmas sweater we could find. And I'd wear 5 one week, and then we'd trade on Sunday. And then I'd wear his 5, and he'd wear my 5 the next week. And it got so bad that in my senior year, People started to ask, like, where do we get these sweaters? Like, I want one of these sweaters. And I'm not talking the ones you buy at the store. I'm talking like your grandma knit this thing, and it is itchy, and it is 3 times too small. And I'm a big guy, but I would wear extra small. It did not matter. I was wearing a sweater every day of the week. And I saw this beautiful opportunity my senior year. I thought, man, people want these sweaters, but I have them all. So what am I going to do? Well, of course I'm going to rent these sweaters out by the hour. And so that's what I did. No, seriously, I rented the sweaters out. If you wanted a sweater just for like maybe one class period or maybe you had a party that weekend, you could rent it out for the entire weekend. It didn't matter because it was paying for my girlfriend's Christmas presents. So, you know, take this sweater. That's my wife, and she knows that's where her presents came from. It was renting out my Christmas sweaters. It's called supply and demand, people. You know, I had the supply. Everybody wanted them, so why not? You know, that was me. You know, it was pretty bad. I ended up selling them off in college, and I still have just a couple, but I'm not joking. Like, check these out. Like, these sweaters were unbelievable. I mean, this top left, that's a sweater vest, and that is hand-knit wool. That's just top quality. I could sell that today for $50, easy. Easy. Sweaters are in high demand. Top right, I mean, turtleneck. I mean, Christmas sweaters. Like, they're awesome. I'm not joking, though. I love Christmas. Like, seriously, I love Christmas. It was pretty bad. I was a bit excessive. But I had such an anticipation for Christmas. And this was just one of the ways for me to show it. You know, but here's the thing. I think we all do this in our lives. And in so many areas of our lives, we let anticipation, we let this buildup happen. We're just expecting and just waiting for something to come. And in a lot of ways, we build up this excitement or this anticipation to levels that really is kind of unachievable. Like we get to this point where we're like, man, if it will just be incredible. And then we get there and it doesn't live up. And this actually happened to me this year. It really bit me in the butt this year. You see, my wife Hannah and I, we had always talked about going to Europe before we had kids. You know, it was a great idea. We're gonna go. We're gonna travel. We're gonna see the world. And so, you know, for me, we've been dating since my Christmas sweater dealing days back in high school. And so we've been talking about this European vacation. I mean, for years. We've been together almost 10 years now. And we've been building up this idea in our minds, I mean, for such a long time. And we decided that we were going to go to the Swiss Alps. And so this past year, we booked our flights, and we did all the Airbnbs. We planned all of our train passes. I mean, we spent 5 months planning this trip. I mean, just the whole thing. We had everything lined up. And it was the day of the trip, And I come home from work, and my wife is, she's putting together the bags, and she's getting everything ready. And so I jump on the United app, and I start to check in for our flight. We got to drive up to Chicago. And I start to put in our passports, and Hannah's went in no problem. But if you remember anything about me, I'm Canadian, and it wouldn't accept my passport. And I thought, well, this is kind of rude. They're just taking it out on me because I'm not American. That's probably it. It wouldn't accept my passport on the app. And so, you know, I thought nothing of it. I went ahead. I jumped on the phone. I called the United Ticketing agent in Chicago. And I was like, hey, I'm having trouble. Should we just drive up? I can show you my passport. You know, I've got it here. Everything's good. And she's like, will you check the expiration date for me? And I thought, yeah, we just went on a trip last year. I'm sure it's fine. And so I look, and I was like, oh, no, it's still valid. I've got about 8 weeks until it's expired. And she's like, sir, there's actually a law that your passport has to be valid up to 6 months to the last day of your trip. 6 months. And I've got 8 weeks. She's like, I'm sorry, sir, but you're not flying today. You're not going to Europe. And so that was it. She hung up. I was like, what? Like, we've been talking about this trip for years, and I am at like freak out mode. Like, Hannah just, she sees the look on my face, and she just kind of like goes to a corner, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Like, I just start calling anyone who will talk to me. I'm calling the Canadian consulate in Zurich. I'm calling the Canadian consulate in Washington, D.C. I'm calling the passport office in Toronto. I'm calling anyone who will listen to me. And everyone keeps telling me, you know, Chris, you're not flying today. You're not getting on that flight. You know, you might be able to get to Europe, but they're going to send you right back to New York City. So where would you rather be, New York City or your house? And so I'm like frantically trying to figure out, what do we do? And so I finally get on the phone with this lady in Toronto, and she says, you need to drive to the nearest Canadian passport office, which is in Windsor. Anyone ever been to Windsor, Canada? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So instead of flying to Geneva, I drove to Windsor. And that was the start of our European vacation. Like, if you've ever been to Windsor, you know, like, I'm sorry if you're from Windsor, but, and I'm from Canada, so it's like, it's cool. They get it, but like, Windsor is not Geneva. Like, not even close. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, you've been dreaming, you've been hoping, you've been expecting, you've been waiting for years and years and years. We had thought about this trip. And it's the day of. And they say, sir, you're not flying today. Heart just drops. I mean, can you just imagine? We did end up getting to go. We added about $2,000 that weekend, and we lost about 3 days. But we got to go to Switzerland and France, and it was a lot of fun. Here's just a couple real quick pictures. I mean, look, that is Sound of Music, like, right? I mean, seriously, Hannah actually, she did like the it was awesome. So, I mean, Switzerland was just absolutely beautiful. That's Mont Blanc in France. I mean, it was just a ton of fun. So glad we did it. So glad we got to go. But have you ever been there where you've been excited, you've been anticipating, you've been waiting, you've been building up this hope for something to come, and then, well, something like this happens. Maybe your passport, it's not expired. Did anyone know that was even a rule? Like, I didn't even know that was a thing, right? But do that when you're like in your mid-20s rather than when you're in your 40s. You can get away with it at my age. But I mean, it was just embarrassing. Like, I couldn't believe that I did that. I told Anna sorry. I mean, I cannot even count the number of times. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Because it was really expensive. But there's actually this one family that I was thinking of that seems to do this a lot when they travel, and especially around the holidays, especially around Christmas time. They're the McAllister family. And the McAllister family, they actually had their own European mishap one time. But a couple years ago, they decided they were going to go to Florida, because there's nothing like going to Florida for Christmas, right? Like, I'm sorry if you go to Florida. All of my neighbors are a little bit older, and they all go to Florida. And so it's cool if that's what you do. But seriously, Like palm trees, like I'm a little bit like Kevin McAllister. Palm trees for a Christmas tree, that does not work with me. But they decided to go to Florida to soak up the rays, to enjoy the sun. They're in Miami, right? And well, when you get excited and you have this anticipation, sometimes things like this happen.
¿Para qué pagamos impuestos? ¿Para tener maestras como usted? Estúpidas, tontas, desconsideradas, que enviaran a los hijos a casa casi sin ropa. Mis hijos no serán los mejores vestidos. A lo mejor no tengan la mejor ropa de ser. Estúpida.
Bueno, señora Welch, mira, quisiera pedirle disculpas. Bueno, bueno, colgó.
Ah, yo la voy a colgar a ella. ¿Qué dice? Bueno, ¿quién habla? Oh, el señor Welch. Está bien, señor Welch.
Turn that down. Hello.
Kate McAllister, please.
This is she.
Ma'am, we found your son.
Oh, my God.
What?
What? It's the police. They know where Kevin is.
What?
Where?
He's in New York City.
He's in New York.
New York?
New York City?
What?
Well, I'm sure he was scared. He's not a troublemaker.
What? What?
New York police are
Would you hold? Just what? A second. Please hold.
Yes. Oh,
okay. Use your credit card to check into the Plaza Hotel.
Do they still have him?
Do they have him?
No. The police are still looking for him.
Damn it.
Get to New York as soon as possible, ma'am.
Okay, we're on the next flight out. Thank you. We're going to New York. Move it.
I mean, can you just picture, if you guys have ever seen them, I actually watched it last night in preparation. I thought it was the best idea. But seriously, they drive up to this motel. They're in Miami, right? You picture, you're going to Miami for Christmas. It's going to be sunny. It's going to be beautiful little palm trees. They pull up to this motel, and Uncle Frank goes, "It didn't look like this on our honeymoon. Like, it's just dumpy, run down. It's pouring rain, and it rains the entire time there in Florida." That is what happens sometimes when we let anticipation build to levels that we can't reach. And so if you're anything like me, you're probably starting to ask yourself this question: why do we do this with Christmas? Because I think we really do this at Christmas time. I think Christmas is one of those times where we let the expectations just blow through the roof. We don't even try and keep our expectations in. My wife and I talk a lot about keeping our expectations in check because we get a little excited pretty easily. And so at Christmas time, man, it just blows out. And I think we all do this. And I think one of the reasons that the Christmas season is one of those times that we let our expectations just go out of nowhere is because that's right where the story began some 2,000 years ago. You see, 2,000 years ago, we're going to take a look back at these 400 years before Jesus was born. And this is sometimes called the 400 years of darkness. Yeah, not the most exciting time to live in. Probably not a time that any of us would ever want to be a part of. But 400 years of darkness is what they called it. And so this is basically from the end of the Old Testament, the first part of the Bible, Malachi, to the beginning of the story where Jesus shows up on the scene. 400 years. I mean, 400 years is a long time. 400 years ago, Galileo actually proved that planets orbit around the sun. 400 years ago. 400 years ago, Manhattan was purchased from the Dutch for $24. Now, that's a good deal if you're asking the Sweater King of the Midwest. The Pilgrims, actually, they were landing on Plymouth Rock ready for Thanksgiving. I mean, as hard as it is for us to comprehend 400 years, it's even harder to really think about how long that must have felt. For God's people, for the Jewish people, for these people that had experienced God, had seen miracles firsthand, had seen God moving in their midst for generations. And then it just goes black. The curtain comes down. The prophet Malachi speaks and then nothing. It all just goes black. God goes silent. And there's 400 years of darkness, of hopelessness. Of nothing. And it's really hard to imagine such a long time, but for people who had seen God moving in their midst, who'd seen God firsthand doing so many things, so many miracles, 400 years must have felt like an eternity. And the longer God was silent, the worse things got for them. And it certainly seemed as though God had forgotten about them and also his promises that he had made. And it got so bad that the Jewish people, they were essentially bounced around from empire to empire. They went from being under the control of the Babylonians, maybe you've heard of them, and then the Persians, like Xerxes, like, you know, 300, like those Persians. And then this guy named Alexander jumps on the scene with the Greeks, and then the Romans. Over a period of 400 years, the Jewish people were in captivity by four of the most, I mean, just powerful empires the world has ever seen. 400 years with nothing. I mean, this is generation after generation, and there is nothing from God. And for these people who had heard about this promised Messiah to come, who had seen God moving in their midst, 400 years must have just felt like, well, he forgot about us. You know, it was a fun ride, but that's probably the end. Actually, seriously, there was the Messiah, Jesus, was talked about, I mean, over 100 times in the first part of the Bible, in the Old Testament. They speak of the Messiah. Here's actually just one of the verses. This is in Zechariah 9:9. Here's what it says. It says, "Rejoice, O people of Zion. Shout in triumph, O people of Jerusalem. Look, your king is coming to you. He is righteous and he is victorious." They had heard these messages. They had heard this talk of this Messiah to come. And then 400 years of nothing. Here's another one. This is Isaiah 9, 6 and 7. It says, For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. 400 years. They'd heard about this Messiah, but there's nothing. Why? Where did he go? Where did God go? What is going on? Heck, I go a few days, and if there's nothing, it's like, what? Man, God, where are you? And that's just a few days. This is generations. Grandparents and great-grandparents and children that just heard nothing. They had experienced him in ways that we really can only read about sometimes. And then nothing. Like, can you relate? When God goes silent, I don't think it takes very long for us to feel like God maybe forgot about us. And suddenly we start to take matters into our own hands. And sometimes we start to even walk away from God in the process. But God is always at work in our waiting. And in this season of hope, this season of expectation, this season that we build up, and maybe for some of you, this season that, if we can be honest, you really don't like. You dread every single year. God is always at work in our waiting. You see, waiting reminds us who is ultimately in control and prepares us for what's next. There's this guy in Luke 2. His name's Simeon. And Simeon, he had lived throughout these generations of nothing. And Simeon was one of those people that people just kept telling him, "You're crazy. Like, God forgot about us. Just stop, man. Like, it's over. It was a fun ride, but just, you know, God's abandoned us. He's forgotten about us." And as a result, he had watched so many people fall away in hopelessness and despair. And Simeon, however, he faithfully clung to the promises of God, believing that God would come through for them in the end. And ultimately, God did. Imagine his joy being one of the first people to meet this Messiah. But I don't want to get too far ahead. That's a story for a few weeks from now. And it's right here in this moment that hope breaks in. But it breaks in a pretty unexpected way. In one of the accounts written about the birth of Jesus, we read about these magi coming from the east. This is in Matthew 2:2. This is what it says. "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." You see, these wise men, they came to visit Jesus because of what they had seen. They came to visit Jesus because of what they had seen. It says that they saw this star, and because of it, they knew about this Messiah. They knew the scriptures from the Old Testament. They knew that there was this promised king that was to come, and they wanted to come, and they wanted to worship him. And then in Luke 2, verses 8 through 11, we read about these shepherds out in the field. And this is what it says. "And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone all around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord." First off, an angel shows up, right? And I don't know if you guys, maybe when you read about angels, maybe you think like, oh, just fat little babies with wings, right? Anybody like, I'm talking like Gerber babies, just real chubby, probably have food on their face, like babies, right? That's what we picture when we think about angels. But it says that they were terrified. They're just out in the fields. They're doing whatever shepherds do. I don't really know what shepherds do. They're just like out there hanging out. And then these angels just show up. And it says they're terrified. And the first thing they say is, "Do not be afraid." You know why? Because a freaking angel just showed up, right? Like, I'm not talking about fat babies. It says, when we read about angels, it says, guys, this is ridiculous. We're talking about angels with eyes like flaming torches, with the glory of the Lord shining around, with the appearance of lightning. Like, you'd be terrified too. You probably would need to change your drawers. You'd be so terrified. Like angels, they're terrified. They're freaked out. Understandably so. But what happens after the angels leave? What happens once they get out of there? They share this news about this Messiah and then they're gone. What do the shepherds do? Well, they get out of there. They leave. They want to go find this Messiah. They want to go find this Jesus because of not only what they have seen, these terrifying angels, but also what they've heard. So what in the world am I trying to say to you guys this morning? Well, you might be sitting out there thinking like, all right, this is cool. But, like, I've never seen an angel in real life, Chris. And I know this was a long time ago. And so what does it really do for us today? Well, here's the thing. You see, the shepherds and the wise men, they come to find Jesus because of what they have both seen and what they have heard. But if I know anything about us today, it's this. It's we can't see and we can't hear when we don't slow down. We can't see or hear when we don't slow down. You see, the Messiah, Jesus, he is available to us today. But if we don't stop, if we don't slow down, if we don't breathe, if we don't look, I think we're going to miss him completely. Because like I said, hope comes in unexpected ways sometimes. 400 years of darkness, black, nothing. And then a baby? Like, they were expecting a king to come riding in with his army. And it's a baby in a manger. Like, that's not what they were expecting. And sometimes I think we're going to miss it too if we don't slow down. And I know you're probably sitting there thinking like, Chris, I hear you. But do you know what season it is? Like, I don't have time to slow down. Maybe you were cooking the turkey this weekend, or maybe you went Black Friday shopping. I get it. We went Black Friday shopping. We had a lot of fun. And I know there's a million things to do on your to-do list. And if my watch is right, it's the 25th. We are 1 month away from Christmas. So I know it is busy. It is crazy. Life is nuts. You don't have time to slow down and breathe. I get it. We just sold our house. We just bought a new house. We're moving in 3 weeks. We, in a matter of 4 days, went from living in Avon to now feeling like we're kind of homeless and having to pack up our entire house to knowing like, oh, we can't even really set up Christmas. And you know how much I love Christmas. Like, my life is crazy right now. But we gotta slow down. We have to, or we're gonna miss it. The second thing is this, it's in our slower pace that we can experience the presence of God in our lives. But if we're unwilling to slow down, we will never experience the fullness of God's promises and God's presence in our lives. And isn't that what we're ultimately all looking for anyway? Maybe a sign, maybe an experience, something tangible, something that we can hold on to, reminding us that God is with us, that God hasn't forgotten about us, that God hasn't just left us to continue to walk by ourselves, that God is truly with us. Isn't that what we want, to experience the presence of God in our lives and that God is with us, especially in this season that's all about hope, but sometimes we just feel hopeless. But if we're unwilling to slow down, we will never experience the kind of fullness that comes in that relationship with God. So what about you? Maybe this season of hope has already started on the wrong foot. Maybe the turkey burned. Or maybe your family said they were going to come and then no one showed up. Or maybe that one uncle came, you know the one, that you really didn't want to come, and they came anyway. Like, maybe your Christmas season just got started on the wrong foot. And so I know this season is maybe rough for a lot of us. And it's a season that actually doesn't feel very full of hope. It actually feels really hopeless. But I have a few things for us this morning. And the first one is to really just slow down. Like, it's automatically built into our lives in this season. They give us the days off, right? Like, why don't we take advantage of it? Why don't we slow down? This season, it only comes once a year. So why don't we fully soak it in? You see, they say with age comes wisdom. And I'm not very old. And so I've got to speak from people that have a lot more wisdom than myself. And I say all of this to you this morning as a young man who's seen so many people around him make this season count. Just like God the Father engaged a broken, a dark, a hopeless world with his son Jesus, I've watched my own father, my own grandfather, my parents, I've watched so many people in my lives engage this season and engage us in this season. You know, I think it's because of my grandfather that I love Christmas. You see, when I was a kid, we would drive 10, 11, 12 hours up to Canada to go to my grandparents' house to see all of our family, our relatives. And I think that the main reason I love it so much is because of my grandfather. He was a man who experienced Christmas to its peak. You know the houses that just have way too many inflatable blow-up things on the yard? That was my grandpa. I mean, just, it got to the point we had to stop buying them from him because he would put them up. The backyard was full. I mean, he loved Christmas. Even to the very end of his life, he had to have Christmas lights on the house. And it didn't matter if he's 80-some years old. He's getting up there. He's putting those lights up. And I mean, he was one that engaged this season of hope in a way that I aspire to do every single year. You see, I think one of my favorite moments of this season was there was one year it snowed, Canada, right? It snowed. Shocking, right? But we didn't have any sleds, and so we just took cardboard, and we went to the hill just back behind their house, and we went sledding. And my grandfather, he's in his 70s probably at that point. He went sledding with us. So you may feel like you're just too busy. You may feel like you've just got too much to do. But why don't we engage this season? Why don't we engage our people in this season? And I think these are our next steps for this morning. If you've got your connection card, grab it or jump on the app. These are three next steps that I think every single one of us can be a part of this year, this Christmas season. I hope we're getting to this early enough in the season so that we can truly dive in and engage the season. What would it look like, the very first one, for me to slow down, to engage my people? Whoever those people are for you, what would it look like for me to truly just slow down and soak in the Christmas season? Or maybe for you, it's finding time this week to engage in the story. You can find it in Luke 2 if you want to read through it. Maybe that's your next step. Why not jump in, begin reading it tonight? Maybe mark this down. Decide today that you're going to lean in, that you're going to try and figure out what this Christmas season is really all about. Or maybe you're wanting to get really intentional. Maybe this is a little bit more of a next step for you, but I want to challenge you with this one. Maybe sometime today, maybe tomorrow, Monday morning, before you get too busy, why not just pause? Maybe get out a pen and paper and start to think through your expectations for what this season is going to look like. Don't let this season happen to you. Think through your expectations, and let's take that just a little bit further. This is for all of us too, not just you, mom and dad, like kids, grandparents, great-grandparents, every single one of us has a way to engage the story, to engage the season. So let's be serious about it. Maybe over family dinner this week, maybe you sit down at the table instead of at the TV, which we are so bad at. And maybe you just sit across from your people and you pull out your list and you say, hey, these are my expectations for this season. This is what I hope to bring to the table this year. Maybe on a date night with your spouse, maybe with your roommates, or maybe students, maybe you sit down at the lunch table this week with your friends and you talk about how this year it can be different. It doesn't have to be the same the way it's always been. This season will be different. And I think this can be a huge way for each one of us to really look at Christmas differently this year, and a great way to keep our hearts in check. You see, Christmas matters. And I know that there's a few of us out there who might be a little bah humbug this morning and think like, you know what, Chris, I don't have time for all this. Maybe you've got a really good reason. I'm sure if I had lived your story, I would have feel the same feelings as you do this morning. But why not engage hope instead of darkness? We don't live in 400 years of darkness. We have hope. So let's engage it this year. We're going to have to be intentional. We're going to have to slow down enough to remember the why and look for the very evidence of God right here in our midst. And when we do that, man, it may end up being the best Christmas ever. Let me pray. God, this morning, what an opportunity we have to engage you, to engage your son, to engage this season. God, I pray for every single one of us in the seats right now, God, that we would not let this season just happen to us, that we would look at our lives, at our people, at our story, and that we would see hope. That we would see you in the midst of the story, right in the midst of it. God, show up this week. Meet us as we seek you. We're trusting you this morning.